This is the 343 Podcast. I'm your host, John Pronich. Welcome to the show. Here in American soccer, we have a diversity problem. But it's not a racial diversity problem, it's a cultural diversity problem. That's right. Racial diversity does not equal cultural diversity. The lack of cultural diversity is one of the biggest issues that we suffer from, but one of the least talked about. Around the world, every club has its own identity. In America, however, MLS is the club, and in order to advance in the sport here, you must conform to that culture. So in this episode, we pick apart MLS's monoculture and begin to highlight why their monopoly over the American landscape is so detrimental to soccer here. We also discuss the passion for the sport in other cultures, like in Argentina. We discuss why one culture thinks that they are the judge of what's right and what's wrong. And we also get into the story of Efra Alvarez and what influenced his trajectory. We'll get started with this episode right after a quick message about our coaching program. Thank you so much for tuning in. When it comes to coaching education, being able to discern what will and won't help you can be costly and confusing. The internet is flooded with so much information. There are tons of drills out there for you to watch and tons of things that you can try with your players and teams. But without the proper context and the proper guidance from a legit mentor, you are not going to get the edge that you are looking for or the results that you want. That's what the 343 Premium Coaching Education Program gets right. It's rooted in the real experiences of a master practitioner that has coached soccer right here in America. As a coach, Brian Kleiben has been able to overcome all of the obstacles and produce college-level, professional, and international-caliber players. Training just twice per week, field congestion, pay-to-play, you name it. But using the 343 framework and staying consistent with the methodology has led to tremendous success. What the 343 coaching program offers you is a look at Brian's actual work, his real art. It's all captured and delivered to you in its purest form to help you gain an advantage and become a better coach. This exclusive online program features videos of Brian mic'd up during actual training sessions with his real players and teams as they prepare for league games and tournaments. This is the only program in the country that gives you this type of authentic, behind-the-curtain look at player, team, and coach development. It's unlike anything else in this country. It cannot be replicated, and it's not theory or speculation like you'd see in a presentation or something staged like you'd get at a convention. So if you're looking for drills, we've got those. But more importantly, we have the mentorship, the proven results, and the community of ambitious coaches that you won't find anywhere else. To experience all of this, consider joining the 343 Premium Coaching Education Program. You can find all of the details at 343coaching.com. What made you think about this topic? What made you want to discuss this?
Right. I think it's derived from the pandemic and from the racial tensions here in the United States, Black Lives Matter, you know, what happened with the police, all of the craziness, the crises that we're going through led me in this direction of wanting to talk about culture, because I think a lot of people, myself included at some point, were conflating the notion of race and culture. And here in American soccer, you know, it's a topic that's of great importance to me because I don't think we have a lot of cultural diversity in the game. And we need to reform that. We need to change that. So that's kind of the origin of wanting to get into this sort of talk.
And when somebody looks at like a Major League Soccer team or Major League Soccer as a whole, they might even point to the fact that there is diversity because there's, you know, a lot of Latinos on teams. There's a lot of Black players in the league. There's even a handful of Latino coaches right now, I think. So yeah, people might say that there is diversity, but what you're saying, there's not a diversity in culture, which is something different. Yeah.
Right. So here's basically the broad brush of it all, and then we can get into the weeds. Yes, there's a lot of Black players. Yes, there's a lot of Latino players, some Latino coaches, and some Latinos, perhaps even in management. But everybody has to conform to the culture that MLS establishes. And that's a monoculture. And that is it has very specific, albeit implicit, guidelines and rules of engagement associated with that. So, for example, players must comport themselves in a particular way. Otherwise, you get fined or worse, right? Coaches, same thing. Executives, the same thing. The way every PR person engages with the public, same thing. Whoever gets credentialed in the media and gets media access has a particular way they must comport themselves as well. And so we've established a sort of monoculture there with not much variation allowed between individuals. So what does that mean? I'll give you a very specific example, maybe regarding coaching at the youth level, coaching at the academy level, and perhaps even coaching at the professional level and certainly at the national team level. What's implicit and sometimes even explicit is you're supposed to kind of shut up and sit down on the sidelines as a coach and not be very verbal or passionate or negative, and certainly, you know, try to use a more refined or civilized language, civilized in quotes there. That's what you're supposed to do. And if you don't adhere to that to acceptable levels, you know, you get reprimanded, or you may not even get to the point where you are able to be a coach in the ecosystem anymore. So while you may be a Latino coach in MLS or the national teams or in the academy or anything of that nature, you are culturally restricted to a great extent. You can't express yourself the way that you were potentially brought up within your culture. Argentines are known to be very passionate on the sidelines. You can look at Marcelo Bielsa, you can look at Cholo Simeone, among others. And if you look at their counterparts who are quote unquote American, who have a different upbringing, like a Bruce Arena, like a Bob Bradley, those sorts of coaches, they're very stoic on the sidelines and kind of, you know, don't express that sort of passion.
You gave the example of Bielsa and Simeone, and in a weird way, they are celebrated by people in the United States, and they're kind of highlighted as examples of, you know, look at this, but it's also their behavior is also highly discouraged. So that's the way that they behave on the sideline, the way like Marcelo Bielsa behaved with his press conference when he got accused of cheating, that type of behavior that was well known and talked about here in the United States, but it's so frowned upon. Like the way that those guys behave, if an American coach were to do that, it'd be so frowned upon.
Yeah. You can look at it from a distance and admire it from a distance, but once it's in your backyard, they treat people very differently. I look at Klinsmann as sort of a midpoint between, you know, the stoic, you know, don't say anything, be a good little boy on the sideline, and the intensity of Cholo Simeone grabbing his balls, you know, when his team scores. Jurgen is kind of a midpoint, and we couldn't even tolerate Jurgen, to your point.
Yeah. I can't remember the name of the guy that's the coach in Seattle. He just stands there with his arms folded.
Schmetzer.
Every game.
Yeah. Schmetzer might be the ideal American soccer coach. Just totally boring on the sideline, boring. Have you seen his locker room talks, you know, pre-game, halftime, post-game, that sometimes they release? It's the most boring thing on planet, most dispassionate thing on planet Earth. It might as well have a robot talking.
there was also there's a clip floating around of him giving instruction to a young player, I think before the player debuts, makes his pro debut. So he's getting ready to step on the field, and Smetzer's like giving coaching advice or coaching points. And I just remember listening to be like, what the fuck are you telling this kid? That kid's going to ignore everything that you're saying right now and go do something completely different.
Right. This was Danny Leyva's debut. I think it was 16 or something like that. The franchise posted that little clip, and then I think people went actually called it out for being so, I don't know how to say this nicely. See, here's this cultural suppression we're talking about, John. Like I can't say what I have to say. But lo and behold, there was backlash to that because it demonstrated a lack of expertise in coaching. And the franchise ended up pulling down the video. You can't find that video on Twitter anymore.
Ah, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Huh.
Here was a perfect opportunity there. I wanted to say a certain something about what I think of Smetzer and that engagement. And I had to filter myself because, you know, our audience to a significant degree is comprised of this suppressive sort of culture, repressed sort of culture. And if I violate their rules of engagement, you know, not only is it frowned upon, but it might be pointed at as a way of, see, that's why this guy should have no part in American soccer. So while I might have Latino roots and Argentine roots or whatever, and I might be hired in some sort of capacity in the ecosystem at some point in the future, I can't express my culture to its fullest or to any significant degree, actually.
This is something that we've talked about prior too, because and I don't know if people understand this fully. I think some people have a little bit of an understanding about it, but once you've gotten yourself on the blacklist, once you've said or done something that it goes against the monoculture, then you are completely locked out of the entire system. And that's the problem that we suffer from in the United States that does not exist elsewhere. So if you made a mistake and you were, you know, working with Real Madrid or something like that, okay, cool. Another club's going to come and swoop you up. But if you say something bad about Seattle Sounders or their coach, well, you're not just banned from Seattle Sounders, you're banned from American soccer.
Right. Well, here it's a monoculture, and elsewhere there's true cultural diversity that's tolerated and allowed. Every club has their own culture. So you can, if one club doesn't like the way you behave or you're not aligned with that club's values and identity, well, you may be very well aligned with another club's values and identity. And you know, you're not locked out. You know, this kind of brings up a memory of a discussion I had not too long ago regarding this topic, but not necessarily in soccer. Is it's not a race issue. It's a cultural issue. Look at In-N-Out Burger, maybe, and Burger King, those two. If you go to In-N-Out Burger, you have a certain experience with In-N-Out employees. You know, the employees seem quite happy. They all seem to exhibit a sense of urgency in fulfilling orders, but fulfilling them correctly and with a very high degree of quality and consistency, you know, versus Burger King, for instance. It's they don't have that culture. It's very different. They're serving a very different service. It's be quick, but the degree of attention to quality isn't there. They don't seem as happy to be there, to be frank, to work. And what's interesting is that if you've worked at In-N-Out for 1, 2, 5 years, 10 years, you've kind of been bred and ingrained with that type of culture, and it becomes part of your personality. Versus if you worked at Burger King for an extended period of time, you become ingrained with a different work ethic, a different way of viewing the world and what work is all about. And if you swapped employees, a Burger King employee went to an In-N-Out place of work, it's going to be very difficult for that person to adapt to the new culture. and vice versa. If you have the In-N-Out employee with that In-N-Out culture, go to be a worker for Burger King, they might not be able to handle it and may want to end up quitting because, you know, all his or her coworkers now share a different set of core values. I hope I'm making that connection, right? It's not a racial thing. It is a cultural thing. And also now, hopefully it illustrates a little bit better of what I'm talking about in American soccer. We have the same sort of issue where cultural diversity is not allowed here.
Well, the example I was thinking of as you were talking, it would be, you know, something like Zlatan or even Wayne Rooney coming over here, and they came from, yeah, maybe like that In-N-Out type of example where they came from cultures, environments, countries that take soccer incredibly seriously, and they came over here and it was like a vacation. It was like Mickey Mouse stuff, and they did not enjoy themselves, and they ultimately left very, very, very quickly. So that was the example I was thinking of as you were talking.
Right. And when they speak up, there's a backlash, right? Even our media backlashes against Zlatan. That's just Zlatan being Zlatan. Like, he's just being, you know, he's a personality, he's a character. Instead of taking his words at face value and saying, no, okay, listen, if Zlatan Ibrahimovic is criticizing the league here for X, Y, and Z, we should probably listen, and it is a valid point, and we should investigate this. No, they derided it, John. This is the monoculture pushing against the foreign culture.
The same, very similar things happened with Jurgen, the way that the media treated him when he would make a statement, you know, very Zlatan-esque or something like that, and that they would treat him the same way.
Yeah, Jurgen, Rafa Marquez. I mean, you can name a whole bunch of the DPs who ended up not being able to tolerate this Mickey Mouse sort of situation that's experienced here. What was interesting, though, is when Chicharito Hernandez was signed to the Galaxy, one of the first things he did and came out in the media through, not our media, through separate media, is Chicharito calling his parents or his dad and saying, hey, dad, no, I signed here. We just have to understand that the European dream is now over. You know, we had a good ride. We have to think more about the final phase of my career. You know, we're going into retirement now. I don't know if you're aware of that, John, but there was a video of Chicharito having that phone conversation with his family. And then not a week later, you know, our own media puts him up in front of the camera. I think it was Alexi Lalas, actually. And he was kind of coached to do damage control against what he had just shared the week prior. So it's not retirement. No, I came here to be very competitive, and this is a competitive league, and we want to win championships, and blah, 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 you know?
The coaching aspect of the interview is interesting because you see the same talking points, like when they need to do damage control, you see the same talking points kind of recycled. Like, oh yeah, this isn't a retirement league. They try to attack the narratives that are going around on Twitter and you know what the fan base is kind of talking about, and they try to use these stars like Vela, like Chicharito and these guys to say, oh no, I'm here to win. Even Zlatan did it to a certain extent. He was saying, I'm here to win titles, blah blah blah. I'm here to win titles.
And it's totally understandable. Their business, they want to protect their message, they want to protect their brand, they want to protect everything. That's fine. It's not a big deal. The big deal is the lack of cultural diversity here. I think of Gerard Piqué and how he has a huge track record of exposing things in Spain, you know, exposing things against his own club, other clubs, the league and how it comports himself, the referees, and he's not necessarily reprimanded or forced to take back his comments.
I'm not in tune enough with that example to expand on it. I know, but I do know that he has been very vocal in regards to Spanish politics, just in general. So he's been able to say those types of things, where here, you know, people aren't allowed to say those types of things either. You have to be neutral across the board.
The other thing that I think is very sensitive regarding this cultural topic is, and I'm wary to even bring it up, but I'll do my best to diplomatically flesh it out. Some cultures are just better at certain things, at certain tasks. We go back to this In-N-Out Burger King thing. The In-N-Out company and employee culture is better at doing certain things than the Burger King employee culture. And I think the same can be said about the culture in technology, the culture in science and math, the culture in particular sports, soccer specifically, because that's what the one we care about here. Some cultures are just more amenable to having success in their particular task. And I think people try to conflate culture with race, and that's where we run into sensitive topics. But I think it is a true statement. If a culture is more inclined in raising their children to value academics, education, things that are not soccer specific, well, that culture is probably not going to raise soccer prodigies at the same rate as a culture who really cares about their soccer and the academics falls a little bit by the wayside. I think that's just a true statement, John. So when I make the following statement, people get butthurt, and that is this. In general, okay, and I hope people understand what that means in general, exceptions aside, the Latino culture is more adept at producing better players than the monoculture that kind of dictates and runs American soccer.
I'm trying to think of ways that you can kind of describe or discuss, you know, what the difference is in those cultures. So like what is actually different about Argentinian culture when it comes to soccer, raising a soccer player, developing a soccer player compared to, you know, the prototypical American soccer player.
In American life, it's very 9-to-5 work oriented, robotic rule following versus in Argentina, it is much more improvised. Work isn't a strict 9-to-5 sort of thing like it is here. Just like in Europe, there's siesta time, you know, people kind of take work less seriously. And since it is more improvised, there's a lot more rule bending, rule following, and the rules aren't that stringent to begin with. And don't have as serious a consequences if you break them as the consequences are here in the States. So that alone, in many respects, I think helps facilitate a certain mindset for soccer players who grow up in this foreigner type culture, not the American culture. The other thing is, if you can apply that same angle to the raising of our youth versus their youth, our youth, again, it's a lot more rule-based, both in the education system and in the household, where you don't see kids out on the street here for extended periods of time, especially once night falls, on their own. It's certainly not at a very young age. But in Argentina and you know, certainly other parts of South America, Europe, you know, I've obviously been to many, many times, but I haven't really taken a keen eye to what's going on there to this degree. But the youth in South America are out in the streets all day long. With friends doing God knows what at all hours of the day and night. And one of the things that they do, of course, is play football and go to these 5v5 pickup games when they're very, very young and there's no adult supervision. And that's something that's not really looked at in a positive light here in the States. But it's just a simple little add-on that I think is a big differentiator, and everybody kind of already understands, is the socioeconomic situation, the difference between how it is here and how it is elsewhere.
And how that affects soccer or?
Yeah, how it affects player development to a big degree, in particular the player's mentality and the family's mentality regarding sport. And so this is an argument that everybody has heard before, that here in the States, if you don't make it, who cares? You know, you live in the, you know, a high GDP, fantastic country where, you know, you're not going to die in poverty. generally speaking, because I know there are a lot of people suffering here, but there's a lot more suffering in these other nations, such as in South America. So the impetus to really get good at this sport thing and make it versus our players is a lot higher down there than it is here, because it's an escape valve from your poverty situation. Yeah, and the other thing is it's more of an escape valve or a release for the families and the player themselves to vent their frustrations or in the sports scene, or at least, as a big distraction from their real world, real life problems. When you're playing a game, you forget those problems, versus here, it's like, yeah, everybody has problems too, but how big of a problem do they really have relative to those other nations? So they want to play more over there. They want to really escape more escapism.
I don't know if it's a topic for another day or if it's even related to this, but when you mentioned it's kind of an escape route for the families as well, I was thinking about like the guys that work specifically in Croatia, because I know that's my family members have done this too. But like, if you don't make it, okay, then you go work like a fucking hard ass job. Like you work a labor job. You work in the shipyard. You work in a concrete mill or whatever those things are called. Like you don't like fall back on your degree and go get like some chill job. Like you work a fucking hard job, and that's the incentive a lot of times for these guys to get out of that family line of work, whatever that may be. And I think the dads, the moms really want to push their kids to get out of that as well. And that's another factor.
Yeah. And the mainstream soccer here is, as we all know, is suburban, affluent, upper middle class, to wealthy demographic. And so if the kid doesn't make it, it doesn't matter. And the kid knows that, and the family knows that. And even if the kid does become a pro and here in the States and MLS elevates them to being a professional and makes 60K or 100K or whatever, if they don't make it, if they don't play, if they're not a starter, if they get cut, if they get demoted to USL, if they're not a pro anymore, they all have this in the back of their heads that, well, who cares? I'm fine. No big deal. I'll go to college or I'll fall back on my degree. Over there, it's life and death if you get cut from a pro team, or if you don't get elevated by a pro team. So the impetus to keep working your fucking balls off is much higher.
I think the word I was looking for was blue collar. So soccer and the rest of the world is a very blue collar sport, where here it's not. It's very white collar. And the example that I always think of is Jamie Vardy, where he went through and the lower divisions playing basically men's league soccer, working his blue collar job for years and years and years, and then he becomes the Premier League Golden Boot winner eventually. But he had that incentive to get out of that hole. I'd like to kind of talk about the way you described Argentinians being passionate, because that can be something that is a very big difference, or not, it can be something. It is something that is very different. So that passion for everything, like you mentioned, includes things like youth soccer or soccer in general. And so when you have a culture that is very passionate about something in that way, compared to American culture, where, typically people are not passionate about soccer, especially parents, like at the youth level, watching their kids play, they're not passionate about the game itself. They're passionate maybe about watching their son or daughter.
Can you hold that thought real quick? I just want to make sure that everybody understands it's a particular culture here in the United States. It's not passionate. It's the dominant culture, right? Because we have millions of Latinos who play soccer in the United States, also millions of other immigrant cultures that play soccer in the United States as well. And they are passionate and they do express their passion on the sidelines, right? But that's a particular reason as to why they are not injected into the main artery of American soccer, right? The typical development academy or the big youth soccer, pay-to-play youth soccer leagues. They're more in these rogue renegade leagues that aren't elevated to prominence. But I'm sorry to interrupt. I just think that's an important point.
No, it is an important point. And it reminded me of something too, that, and it's a personal example with my father, but I've seen it happen multiple times now as a coach and as a referee, that when you have that one parent or that those two parents on the sideline that are passionate, they stand out like sore thumbs. And then all of a sudden it the optics of it seems strange. Like, why is this guy yelling at his kid? And people don't understand. And I know, like, what happened with my dad is that he ultimately had to assimilate to the existing culture because he you know, stood out so much and he felt embarrassed almost, I think. And I think that that happens more than people think. And even if they aren't embarrassed about the actual behavior, people might actually change. You know, that passionate culture might actually change and silence themselves because they want to, or they don't want to stand out.
No, that's exactly right. And so, again, they're assimilated into one culture. They have to repress who they are, and hence the lack of cultural diversity that ends up being in our soccer, John.
It's funny. What I just remembered is, you know, in one weekend when I'm refereeing, I might referee, you know, girls club games, guys club games, whatever, you know, Coast Soccer League and whatever. And the culture there on the sidelines is very quiet, calm. You know, every now and again, people will cheer when something cool happens. And those games typically have, you know, lots of Latino players, Hispanic players, other immigrant cultures or players. And then in the same weekend, I'll go referee men's league, or the men's league here has a youth league, and it's all Hispanic kids. And those sidelines, it's like night and day difference. It's like, sometimes it's almost like a party on the sideline. There's barbecues and all kinds of stuff happening, but it's fiery on the sidelines. I don't know a better way to describe it. Fiery to the point where at certain games between certain teams, they know that there's going to be problems. So they have to bring security guards for games between 10-year-olds. And people, I tell that to people and they're like, what are you talking about? Like that, like what? It's like, yeah, that's their culture. So it's hard to explain that to people though.
Yeah. And the trouble that I run into, the thing that bugs me here is that this monoculture that we keep describing really believes that there's a right and wrong way of doing things with respect to raising children or anything for that matter. So when they hear stories like that or they witness it firsthand, they actually don't view it as a cultural difference. They view it as a right versus wrong, right? So they're right and we're wrong. You know, our parents were wrong for yelling at us and expecting a lot of us and criticizing us. And their way of child rearing and their way of what thinking of what soccer is and isn't, it's just the game versus, you know, it's more than just the game, for example, that they're correct and we are incorrect in the way that we view sports and the way we view youth sports. And that's where things become very dangerous. Right? Because if they think that they stand on a moral high ground, then it becomes a very difficult situation for us to reform our system into including these other cultures.
I'm thinking right now about the way that we celebrate people like Tiger Woods and we celebrate people like Serena and Venus Williams, but in the same sense that I mentioned earlier, you can appreciate it from afar, but nobody would dare raise their kid like Tiger's father raised him, the way that he, you know, put pressure on him, the way that he spoke to him, the way that he acted around in front of him. Nobody would dare do that, but everybody knows and attributes that the way that he was raised to his success in the sport that he pursued, and he wouldn't have become such a great golfer had he not been raised in that way.
Their rationale then becomes the following, because I've heard the stories a million times. Well, Gary, well, John, that's the one exception. Tiger's the exception. Serena and Venus are the exception. What about all those other kids who were raised in a similar way as Tiger and the Williams sisters, with that sort of culture, and it didn't pan out for them? Those kids are now ruined for life, is their narrative, right? They didn't become professionals, and now God knows, you know, what their lives are like now, but they're probably damaged goods by the way that their parents raised them. You know, that's their rationale, right?
Yeah, no, I've heard that before too.
You know, talking about passion, and talking about those particular situations as well, it brings us up to maybe what is the child of passion, which is being critical. If you're very passionate about something, it means you care so much about it that it's natural for you to be more critical about what's going on. So critical about, critical to your son or your daughter, with respect to how they're performing, and critical to their teammates, and critical of the coach, and critical of the system, critical of everything, if you're passionate. If you're not passionate about something, then your brain's just not wired to criticize. And again, we get into this whole right versus wrong topic. It reminds me of, again, talking about Argentine culture and going to family friends and my parents' discussions with their friends and me overhearing them. They would always laugh at how here in the United States, everything is quote unquote amazing. It's all amazing, right? So they would listen to maybe Jay Leno or Letterman, and when they'd have actors and actresses come on or whatever, you'd always hear the actors and actresses say, oh, my colleagues are amazing. You know, my director was amazing. The producers are amazing. The movie's amazing. And even their competition, okay, for roles and their competing movies, for instance, they'd always say the word amazing. And if you look at Argentine talk shows, that it's just completely different. You know, over there it's criticism up the asshole, and you can't get away from it. And so again, just an illustration of the different types of cultures. And if we go to American soccer again, it seems like here everybody who's in the bubble or accepted within the monoculture, they have that same sort of attitude. Everything's amazing. The future is always bright. You know, if there's a change in leadership or coaches, oh, give the new coach and new leadership a chance. You know, they're good people, you know, blah, 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 blah. And that's just not what happens in South America.
Well, that resonates with me because I'm typically looked at as a negative Nancy, and I don't necessarily think I'm negative all the time, but other people, they don't hear me or say these things like, oh yeah, that's amazing. I never say or give praise to a lot of things. I tend to be very critical, ultra critical, and that is frowned upon. People don't enjoy seeing those types of things from me. And I consistently get that comment from a lot of people.
Yeah. And again, it's a right versus wrong in their mind also, because they'll talk about healthy versus unhealthy. It's healthy to be our way, and it's unhealthy to be your way, John. Your way is you're poisoning your own soul, and you're poisoning the people that listen to you by having critiques, you know, and not always looking on the brighter side of things. You know, it's poison you, John, to, you know, always, even though it's not always, they like to pin it in a binary way, that you're always looking at the glass half full or half empty, right? Instead of the glass half full. Again, a cultural difference, but they view it as more of a right versus wrong. That's what we're battling against, man.
I want to try to bring in a more personal story that you've talked about many times with Ephra. And people are very familiar with, if they're familiar with this podcast, then they're familiar with who Ephra is probably. And it's another one of those examples that people will celebrate him from afar. They will celebrate him, you know, signing his contract at 15 and a half years old, scoring hat tricks in USL, and then playing with the first team last year. And they will appreciate all of these things about him, but they don't necessarily understand why he is the way he is and where he is at this moment in his life, 17 years old, playing professional soccer. And I know that we've talked about it before. I don't know if we've talked about it publicly, but his upbringing was also ultra critical, and it was a lot different than like that monoculture type environment that we've been discussing throughout this episode. So I'm wondering if you can maybe shed a little bit of light into Ephra's story and kind of use that as an example for people, because then they can then watch him on TV or go watch one of our YouTube videos and understand a little bit more about what went in the making of him.
There's a whole bunch of stories. The bottom line is the family was always very hard on him and very critical of him, especially when he would have bad games and wasn't playing to his full potential or wasn't exerting his maximum effort in matches. You know, Ephra himself would share, and the father, at least with me, would share, you know, car rides home. And in the car ride home, it wasn't, you know, oh, good job, son, you'll get them next time. You know, it didn't work out for you today. Or hey, man, it's not your fault. You know, your teammates should have done X, Y, and Z, or your coach should have done X, Y, or Z. It wasn't those types of discussions. It was more like, Ephra, you and only you are responsible for how you perform and how you execute. And today you were shocking. And I'm saying that in a nice way here, John. Again, my cultural suppression. So those were the car rides home between Ephra and his father, or Ephra and his older brothers. Very critical in nature relative to what is socially acceptable here in the monoculture that is American soccer. And then from the coaching perspective, I think people have an idea that Brian is also very nurturing to all his players, and his players all love him. He also doesn't sugarcoat things, and in Ephra's particular case, if Ephra's not doing well, but not doing well not because, you know, shit happens and sometimes your game is off, no, that's acceptable. What's not acceptable is if 100% effort isn't put into it, and if Brian would notice that, or I would notice that, you know, he would get an earful. And the expectations for him and every player that's ever played for us are maximum expectations with no sugarcoating. So that's the environment he was brought up in, and that's how he was molded. Now it's out of our hands. It's been out of our hands for a year now, a little bit over a year. And we'll see. We'll see now that he's in a very different environment relative to that, if it works out for him or if it doesn't work out for him. I imagine that going from a highly critical competitive cauldron to something that's softer is probably not best, but we'll have to see.
Yeah, the car ride home aspect, we've talked about that before, and we kind of mentioned it in passing a few times, but that seems to be a very influential moment in a lot of players' careers, whether it's the car ride home, or in other countries might be the walk home or the train ride home. But like that moment immediately after a game seems to be a moment that a lot of professionals and former professionals always come back to, like the way that their parents spoke to them in those moments. And I've heard, you know, countless times from some of the best players in the world that that their parents being ultra critical of them, not being lovey-dovey, not being, oh yeah, everything's okay, or like your example, everything's amazing. It's the players that had, you know, ultra critical or in ultra critical environments that ultimately became the best players in the world. I struggle to think of an example of somebody that didn't have that type of background that's, you know, made it to the peak.
Yeah, me too. I don't know of a particular case either.
Yeah, and I was gonna say, and then also another trend seems to be that in, you know, high performers, they tend to come from some type of struggle more often than not. I don't know. I can't think of any way to kind of quantify that at the moment, but I just, over the years, I remember hearing so many stories about people that came from nothing and that they ultimately became the best at whatever they do, or they had to overcome struggle, or they had to suffer, or those types of things. And then that's what was a big influence into getting them into their top spot. And we don't, in a way, we don't have that within, you know, the American soccer story, because in general, the monoculture, the way that youth club soccer is set up and college soccer is set up, they're not really set up to welcome the types of cultures or the types of players that come from struggle here. Those types of players tend to be filtered out, you know, through the youth soccer system.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I don't have much else to add to that. The only thing that comes to mind is everybody gets a trophy sort of culture.
Yeah.
Seventh place gets a trophy, you know, eighth place gets a medal as well for participation and all that stuff. And the immigrant culture doesn't really jive with that and can't wrap their heads around, what are you talking about, man? We're talking about a competitive situation. Sports or any game, the whole point of it is to compete. And while you might applaud effort and awesome that you chose to compete instead of not compete at all, you don't give a fucking trophy for eighth place, you know. Again, more of a cultural difference. If you reward middle of the road effort, middle of the road performance, or if you reward last place, like, what are we fucking doing here? You know, you're not making anybody better. You shouldn't be incentivizing or rewarding, you know, anything other than peak performance.
And the example that everybody's probably familiar with in American sports across the board is you finish last, you get first draft pick.
Right. Right. Even though in soccer, luckily it's very different than the other American sports, because draft picks really don't mean shit in soccer, because, you know, most of the high level talent in football doesn't come from, you know, playing 2, 3, 4 years of college and becoming a professional at age 22. So getting first draft pick, you know, here in the United States doesn't really amount to much. But yeah, your point is well taken.
Yeah. Even though MLS has done their best to make it like an event, that to make the draft an event and to make it seem relevant, until recently, I think they decided to do away with like draft day festivities. I don't think it's part of like the, when did they used to do it? At the convention, I think. I think they stopped it this year.
Right. This is a whole other episode, John, but I feel the need to say it anyways, because this point right here already demonstrates how soccer is different than the other sports. Because everybody who says, well, the other sports are the best in the world and we should do things like the other sports, the NFL, baseball, basketball does it because they're the best in the world. Well, okay, if that's the way to do it, then why, you know, why did MLS go in the direction of forming academies, right? Why is it clear now that college soccer is not a great source of talent for MLS teams? Because soccer is different. And these are just two examples of that. But again, topic for another episode.
Mm-hmm. Anything else on cultural differences that you think we need to cover?
No, man. I just think it's a very big issue. It's an issue that has to go into discussions of reform, because now that I'm sure in the U.S. we're going to hire more black coaches, general managers, executives, U.S. soccer board members, and we're going to have more Latinos in those positions as well. I think it's important for people to understand that doesn't mean any change has been instantiated, because whoever gets those jobs and those opportunities, they're only going to get them if they have demonstrated conformity to the monoculture, that they are going to behave and have the same values and follow the same sorts of unspoken rules that the monoculture has dictated. So there is no diversity. It's just the same type of person with a different skin color in this position.
The example I'm thinking of is Carlos Cordero. And, you know, it was referenced quite often that, you know, look, there's a minority in charge of U.S. soccer. It's like, yes, that is true. But the culture that he's a part of, which is like that millionaire, billionaire class of people, that culture is not, that's not Latino culture. So to think that he's, you know, representing, you know, Southern California or Central California, because he is, you know, he's a minority, that's the wrong way to approach it. His culture is not his race.
Yep. That's exactly right. Everybody has to suppress their way of their values and accept the monoculture's values. That's it. Bottom line, if you want to have opportunity, otherwise you're not going to get the opportunities.
Our flagship program helps coaches and trainers discern what is good for their teams and for their players. But now we've created a program for parents. Because parents, you are personal trainers too. Yep, that's right. And in order to properly mentor your player, you need to know what's good and what's not. Just like coaches, you and your player are flooded with thousands of training videos on YouTube and Instagram. But most of them are a waste of time because they aren't relevant. They don't translate to the real game. And figuring out what does and what doesn't, and why, is just flat out difficult, especially if you don't have a background in soccer to lean on. So we've taken Brian Kleiben's more than 20 years of experience working with teams and individual players, from U9 to U19, and extracted valuable lessons that can help you navigate the minefield that is American youth soccer. But this isn't just about drills. That's only a small fraction of it. And to be honest, you can get drills anywhere. What you're getting with the 343 Masterclass are the cultural lessons and an education in philosophy that other trainers and courses don't offer. It's these elements that can help you understand the landscape, read the game on and off the field, and translate everything into real development for your player. Right now, you can get on the list for the 343 Masterclass. We are currently rolling it out little by little to small groups. To reserve your spot, go to 343masterclass.com. All right. Thank you for listening. Do you have a question about the topic that we covered in this episode? If so, we'd love to hear from you, and we will be answering some of your questions at the end of next week's episode. Submit your questions on Twitter or head to 343coaching.com to leave your question in the comment section. Make sure that you are subscribed to 343 FM on your favorite podcasting app. The show is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, and many more platforms. And if you're feeling super generous, we'd love it if you dropped us a 5-star rating or a review. And don't forget that you can find our entire library of podcast episodes, over 200 written articles, and our online courses that help accelerate the development of coaches and players using methods that have been proven to work here in the United States. Once again, all of that can be found at 343coaching.com. All right. Thank you so much for listening. We will catch you next time here on the 343 Podcast.